everyone. We are delighted to be back with season two of the Period Panel, proudly supported by Active Iron. I'm delighted to be joined by Jess Redden today, who is a qualified pharmacist. It's great to have Jess on the show as she gives her a real insight with her education, her background as a pharmacist. She deals with questions about women's health all the time through her work, and we were able to debunk some myths around periods, around women's health, and we also took your questions from Instagram, and Jess gave us some great answers. Jess, it's great to have you here on the Period Panel. I think the first question that I have for you is, with your background in pharmacy, you're a pharmacist, I'm sure you meet people all the time that have questions around periods and menstrual cycles. So what are the usual questions that you get asked?
Thank you so much for having me today. So I suppose to answer your question, the most common advice that people seek in relation to their periods would be to do with cramping and pain. They're always looking for advice as to what they can use, not always necessarily to do with medications. You know, they're looking for lifestyle advice as well, which I think, you know, is great to see and great to hear women talking about too.
Have you noticed people come seeking more of that lifestyle advice more recently?
Yeah, I think it could be to do with maybe a shift in what's going on in social media, with a lot more people tending to look after their mental health and their lifestyle and diet and everything like that more so now than ever before. So yeah, I'm definitely seeing that in practice.
And in relation to the conversation, do you think that women are becoming more comfortable to have conversation around period and menstrual cycle? Have you noticed that as a pharmacist?
Definitely. So I started working as like an over-the-counter assistant about 10 years ago. And back then, I don't think I ever had a conversation with a woman about periods, about menopause, nothing. So it's great to see such progress in the area, but I still think there is a lot that needs to be done. Perhaps closing the gap between male and female knowledge. Only recently, I'm really lucky because I love everybody I work with, but one of the guys, he was listening to the Fabulous Pharmacist podcast, and he came in one day and he said, gosh, I never knew anything about the menopause. And you know, they weren't taught that in school. So I think at a society level, that needs to change as well. There needs to be more education, and just a safe place for women and men to speak about it.
Yeah, definitely. That's something we talk about a lot, actually, is the fact that men have been left out of the conversation. Yeah. But, you know, we have this kind of expectancy sometimes that they just get it. But then when you go back to the education that they've had, or, you know, sometimes we can be a bit awkward talking about periods, menstrual cycle, menopause, whatever it is, that we've completely left them out as well. So, yeah, it is really, really important. I suppose in relation to kind of the barriers, like, why do you think it is that there has been some stigma around conversation around women's health, I suppose?
I think that stems back from, you know, it's been a really long time that women feel comfortable enough to be able to speak about it. And again, that comes to the gap in male and female knowledge. Like, women don't really feel comfortable around men talking about things like periods or overactive bladder or things like that. And I've noticed, say, with the guy that I work with, because he is so involved in wanting to know more, I feel so comfortable talking about those things around him. Whereas if another man was to come into the situation, I definitely wouldn't, which, you know, I know it's okay to be able to speak about it. So I think the more knowledge people have, the more inclined they are to open up and to speak. So I guess barriers we put on ourselves, and like, we do have a bit of ownership ourselves to be to be talking about it with our friends, with our family. Only recently I kind of was opening up to my friends about having OAB, so overactive bladder, whereas before I would have been mortified speaking about it. And I think that's something, pressure I put on myself. And again, maybe social media, and we think everything has to be perfect and everything, you know, prim and proper, but nobody really talks about the gory details, which we need to.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's obviously so much going on with anybody, but particularly a woman's body, and it's not something that we should be embarrassed about or shy about. And, like, we can learn so much from each other, which is really important as well.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. I find when, even if I'm talking about something and a few other women will pick up on that and say, oh, well, I thought I was alone in experiencing that. Like, when you open up the conversation, other women feel less alone, and then they speak about it, and then that's just how more knowledge is shared around.
And you're doing a lot of question boxes on your Instagram at the moment, sharing all the information. How are you kind of finding that engagement with the people that are in your community and, you know, having conversations with you on social media?
I think it's amazing to be in a position that you can help other men and women in that way. It would mainly be women asking those kind of questions. Perhaps before they weren't really, you know, confident enough to go into their own pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And because I share so openly, they feel maybe comfortable, because that's all you want at the end of the day. Everybody just wants to feel accepted, heard, comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think by being so open online and by putting out information, like, people find that really helpful. And that's why I started pharmacy in the first place, to help people. So it's great to be able to do that on a wider scale.
Yeah, no, there's always so much information on your Instagram stories. No, I think it's great because, as you said, like, you're, you know, sharing things that, like, lots of people are probably wondering about. You know, you're putting that information out there for people. They're able to engage in, you know, if they're too shy, maybe to ask the questions in person sometimes, that they're able to, you know, ask you virtually, and that you're able to share that information with them is great. And you're giving so much insight into so many different things. So, I definitely think it is helpful, and hopefully it'll encourage more people to talk amongst themselves or share that information with maybe some people that are in their circle.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned cramping already, and I know that ActiveRN conducted a survey recently with 2,400 women in Ireland and the UK on women's experiences with their period, and that they found that cramps is the most frequent symptom that people experience. I think sometimes what we've heard is that there can be a little bit of a hesitancy to take painkillers. Like, sometimes people feel that they have to, like, really, really need them, or think that you know, it can become less effective if they take them too often. Can you give us a little bit of insight to this, as, you know, as a pharmacist, someone that, you know, has more information than the rest of us does, maybe bust some myths and give us all the details?
Yeah, because it can be really confusing because there's so much out there, and I think too much choice sometimes is, like, just totally freaks you out. You don't know what to go for. So again, you know, empowering people to go in and have that chat with their pharmacist. Mm-hmm. But general, I suppose, in terms of medications, so paracetamol is the safest thing you can take. Mm-hmm. It has been the safest since it first came out, and it's got the least amounts of side effects. It's well tolerated. But for cramping, so cramping is caused obviously by contractions in the mm-hmm. uterus. So you want an anti-inflammatory that's going to help. It's going to be an analgesic as well as that anti-inflammatory. But the thing with those, so the way in which they work, so they stop the production of a hormone, prostaglandin, and that's responsible for the pain. But what prostaglandin is also responsible for is blood flow to the kidney.
Okay.
So anti-inflammatories like Nurofen, Diclac, they can be really hard on the kidneys. But a general rule, if you're using them for 3 days a month during your period, at a dose of 400 milligrams three times a day, best taken after food to protect the tummy, totally safe. And to answer your other question, building up a tolerance to them doesn't really happen with mm-hmm. things like ibuprofen or paracetamol. Opioids, yes, it does. And, you know, the more you're using them, the more you need to get that kind of pain. Whereas with ibuprofen, there's a ceiling effect. So mm-hmm. by taking 800 milligrams, you're not going to get more relief than 400, but you're going to increase the risk of side effects.
I think that's some really useful information for people to have. You know, we're obviously experiencing menstrual cycles on a regular basis, you know, in and around once a month. So I think that hesitancy for people sometimes to take medication, but then they're going through so much pain and finding it really tough to do day-to-day tasks. And I know there's been research into, you know, how periods and menstrual cycle is affecting people in the workplace and, you know, school and college, and can actually be kind of debilitating sometimes.
Yeah, and I think as well as, I think a lot of people always assume they have to reach for medications mm-hmm. in order to cure their pains. But I find if you address your diet and lifestyle mm-hmm. first, a lot of the times that can help. So in relation to cramping, I would always recommend a hot water bottle. That, for me anyway, that works wonders. So hot water bottle, gentle exercise. So sometimes people overdo it when they're on their periods and mm-hmm. your body is literally contracting inside. So you need to do gentle, you know, yoga, Pilates, walking, swimming. All of those things are great. Another myth, women think they can't swim when they're on their periods. Because I would often recommend that. I said, oh, have you gone for a swim? That often helps. And they're, I can't, I'm on my period. Or else, like, complementary alternative medicine. I don't know if you know, have heard much about that, because it's not really spoken about, but say starflower oil. So okay. that's rich in a GLA, which is an omega-6. So okay. it's an anti-inflammatory. And for a lot of women, you know, they get a reduction in their inflammation and therefore a reduction in pain as well.
Mm-hmm. And then things like hydration and good sleep as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's actually the second most frequent symptom that women experience, is that tiredness and fatigue. So how does period cause menstrual fatigue, and what advice do you have for women to help alleviate that?
So when we are menstruating, we're losing blood. Mm-hmm. So the role of iron in the body, so it makes a protein called hemoglobin, which carries oxygen around the body and gives us energy. So when we're losing blood, we're losing iron. So a lot of the times women can be low in iron. Personally, I recommend the Active Iron brand. Mm-hmm. It's clinically proven to be effective at raising those iron levels, as well as being gentle on the stomach. Because what I find in practice, a lot of women taking traditional iron supplements, they suffer from side effects like mm-hmm. constipation or sore stomach. And then with liquid iron supplements, they get to bypass those effects, but the concentrations are quite low, mm-hmm. usually only 5 milligrams per dose. But Active Iron, they have, I think it's 14 to 25 milligrams. So, you know, for different customers' needs, it's a good one to have.
Yeah, I've definitely tried out a few iron supplements in my time and have had no side effects with Active Iron, so can vouch for it as well. In relation to some of the other symptoms or questions that you get asked about, what are the other regular questions that you're getting from people coming into you?
I think bloating is a big one.
Okay.
A lot of women would complain about bloating during their period, which can be really common as well. And that one, rather than reaching for medicine, that one's all about lifestyle and diet mm-hmm. and watching your salt intake. Also eating like potassium-rich foods, mm-hmm. So sweet potatoes, banana, that helps to decrease sodium in the body. And it also helps to increase urine production. And then you can look at your food intake as well. So there's natural diuretics, which helps to excrete water. So things like pineapple, so lifestyle tips, I guess, with bloating. A good probiotic maybe as well.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And I think it's so good to have this conversation and talk about like the natural things that you can do in changing, whether it's your diet or your lifestyle, that can help alleviate some of these symptoms. Because I think, you know, some of those small changes can make such a big difference and make the experience of being a woman or having a menstrual cycle a little bit easier. What about, like, you know, some of the, you know, more severe side effects that people have? I know, you know, we're trying to open it up as much conversation as possible. So we kind of act like martyrs maybe sometimes when it comes to, you know, having a period, having cramps, but then sometimes people can be in, you know, more severe and more significant pain, but because we've kind of this expectancy that that's just being a woman, we don't maybe notice when something is a little bit different and maybe when you should go and speak to, you know, a doctor about it.
I agree with you there, and I think again from working with customers, they're not willing to volunteer all of the information.
Mm-hmm, okay.
They might tell me, oh yeah, I'm a little bit tired, and then if you dig a little bit deeper, you know, they do want to open up. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm guilty of it myself. I don't want to overshare and I don't want to burden anybody else, but you're not burdening anybody else, because you really do have to, like, you only have your health is your wealth. That's what I always say. So it's really important to go and speak to your doctor or your pharmacist for free advice. But if anything is different or if anything seems too extreme and it's interrupting with your daily, day-to-day activities, like extreme pain, that would always be a red flag to go and get that checked out.
And another time in relation to supplementation with iron is during pregnancy. Can you talk to us a little bit about this?
Yeah, so during pregnancy, your blood volume increases. So therefore, your iron requirements increase as mm-hmm. well, because the baby obviously needs more oxygen. So usually towards the second and third trimesters, first trimester, I've got my levels checked and they were okay. But second and third trimester, again, your blood volume can increase by up to 80%, which is quite high. Yeah. And diet alone, it's really hard to get adequate iron from your diet alone. So often iron supplements are needed there.
So you're obviously pregnant. Congratulations. Very exciting news for you. What has been the experience like for you so far?
Honestly, it's been amazing. And I think I was really nervous because from what I saw online or from talking to friends and family, a lot of the times, not that it's spoken about negatively, but maybe the negative parts are highlighted, you know, mm-hmm. the fatigue, the nausea, but to be honest with you, I've never felt like the better version of myself ever. And I think that's so nice.
Yeah.
So I really just love pregnancy. And even though like my symptoms might change day to day, like that gratitude that I feel is there every single day.
Brilliant. Well, it's certainly an exciting time for you. What has been the most surprising thing, I suppose, that you've come across since you've been pregnant?
Pregnancy brain is real. That's not a myth. I'm doing just the maddest things. And I thought that that was kind of like, oh, you're just trying to find an excuse. But it really is. Like, your brain gets so foggy. So that was like the biggest surprise. And the hunger, like, nobody tells you about that. I'd finish like a 3-course meal, and then about 20 minutes later, I'd be starving again. So yeah, the hunger in the baby brain, that's been the most surprising.
Well, look, you are feeding another human, they are growing. So
true.
just keep eating, keep enjoying it.
Yes.
And I suppose, what are some of the kind of best tips and tricks that you've learned over the past couple of months? Have you any like piece of advice that you think you'd share, you know, with new moms or, you know, women that are pregnant at the moment?
Well, I think I've changed so much even in the last couple of months since becoming pregnant. Mm-hmm. My friends would have always labelled me as having the disease to please. So I would just say yes to everything. Like, even if I had a full day of activities, if someone asked me to go and do something, I'd be like, yeah, of course, even though I don't actually physically have the time. Whereas now I can finally say no, and I don't feel guilty for it either. And then even in terms of like going out, I used to be like, oh, I have to stay until at least 11 or at least midnight. Whereas it gets to 7:30 and I'm tired, I'll say, mm-hmm. okay, see you, bye. And that serves me so much better, and I feel less anxious. And so I guess to be selfish with your time and with your energy, and also to enjoy the time to yourself and not feel guilty of it. I think a lot of us are guilty of, if we're just sitting there doing nothing, we feel like we have to be mm-hmm. productive all the time and doing this and doing that, but you don't. I think like the most productive thing you can do sometimes is rest. Mm-hmm. So I'm finally giving myself that chance to just rest, and then also spending time with your partner too, because it's the last time it's going to be the two of you. So like, just be, I'm being extra bougie, I'm like, yeah, I'm booking this trip and I'm doing that, because you don't get that time back. So just to celebrate yourselves.
I saw you were having a few holidays there anyway. You were away with your mom as well, were
yeah
you?
We went to Portugal. Sun, I was born in the wrong country and love the sunshine. So yeah.
Well, you did your stint in Australia.
I know. I'd love to go back. Oh, especially with kids. It's so nice. They can go outdoors and
No, look, it seems like pregnancy is certainly suiting you, and you're really enjoying it, which is fantastic. We're delighted to be working with Active Iron for season 2 of the Period Panel. I myself have been taking their supplements for over a year and have had a really positive experience. One of the best things about Active Iron is the fact that it's so gentle on the stomach. So now let's dive back into the Period Panel. So ahead of you coming in to be on the Period Panel, we put a question box up on our social platforms and got some good questions. So the first one, is Active Iron better than Galfra and Ferrograd? Always get asked by patients, and it's hard to tell.
Okay, so high dose iron supplements, they dissolve in the stomach. So this can lead to oxidation and inflammation in the gut as well. And that leads to the common side effects that can be associated with iron, so nausea and constipation. And the difference with Active Iron is it targets the DMT1. So that's the site of absorption. So it gets to bypass those side effects, and it's clinically proven to increase iron levels as well.
Very good. Thank you. Then we have, I bleed very little. Is it a concern as I just go through 2 panty liners? I'm 34, never bled very heavy.
Okay, to me that sounds normal. You know, I think people, if there's a change in what is normal for you, that's when you would seek advice. But if you've always had light periods and that's normal for you, then that's normal. If you've always had, you know, a 28-day cycle or a 30-day cycle and that's your pattern, whatever your pattern is, that's normal for you. I wouldn't be concerned.
Okay. And then that one might actually feed into another question that we have. So we have 40-day period cycles, normal or not? I'm 44.
Okay. So again, I would be asking the question there, what is your typical cycle length? I think it ranges from around 17 to 35 days. So I guess that is outside the norm. It would be the upper range of normal. But if it's always been around 40 days, then I would see no problem with that either.
Perfect. And then in relations to hypothalamic menorrhea.
Okay. That's something I would get asked quite a lot. So basically that's when women lose their periods, either due to extreme exercise or inadequate calorie intake. So what really needs to be done there is lifestyle changes. So you need to pare back the exercise. Instead of doing really intense HIIT cardio workouts, try walks instead. But it can be really hard to tell someone, like, just change your lifestyle, because, you know, they love to work out. They love to do what they do daily, and they don't want to change that. So it does take a lot of commitment for yourself. But if you do want to restore your periods, you have to take ownership and change and have a look at your lifestyle.
That's something that we come across quite a lot, you know, that conversation, particularly like in the world of sport, because people have quite heavy training schedules. And I suppose sometimes it's about actually identifying that there is something off kilter if your period goes missing and, you know, you haven't experienced it for a couple of months.
Definitely. And it'd be something to seek advice about as well, because our hormones then obviously aren't working properly, mm-hmm. and they need the protein, they need the calories. So increasing food and pairing back on the mm-hmm. exercise would be something I'd recommend, but as well talking to like a dietitian or your mm-hmm. doctor or your pharmacist.
Yeah, absolutely. And linking in with coaches sometimes too.
Yes.
And then in relation to endometriosis, how to seek help on a diagnosis?
Again, that requires, you know, a doctor's conversation there, I would suggest, because if you're suffering from things that are interfering with your day-to-day activities mm-hmm. or your daily life, extreme pain, anything like that, you shouldn't be suffering in silence. So definitely go and have that conversation mm-hmm. with the doctor.
And then the last question. So someone has said they're still breastfeeding their 7 month old, but still no sign of period returning. Should they be concerned?
So when you're exclusively breastfeeding and you're not doing any bottle feeds, it would be very normal to not get your periods back.
Okay.
But again, it can take a couple of months. So, you know, if you're something that's concerning you, chat to your local pharmacist or talk to your doctor either.
That's really interesting. That's something that I certainly wouldn't have known. So thanks a million for all of the help with those questions.
Thanks so much.
I know you're really passionate about exercise and movement. How have you found that kind of transition from not being pregnant to being pregnant? How has the experience been?
Yeah, so I guess the first 12 weeks, I took it pretty easy. Like, I was still getting in my walks. I was walking to work, I was walking home from work, but I was resting a lot more than I usually would. And then trimester two, I got a lot more energy back. So I started back with my regular routine. So I'm doing my kind of weight classes 2 or 3 times a week. And then I'll do spin, Pilates. And I just love it. Like, it's really good for pregnancy. I think there's kind of myths around there that, you know, you can't exercise at mm-hmm. all when you're pregnant. Or if you've never exercised before, you can't start during pregnancy. But it's a great time to start because it's so many benefits. For me, it's like the mental health aspect of mm-hmm. it. Like, I just feel amazing after workouts. So I'm grateful that I'm feeling good enough to keep it up.
And what about some of those myths? Like, what myths have you been able to bust, you know, since you've had this experience? Or what are some of the questions that you've been asked by other people?
So one that I actually believe myself was that you can't run when you're pregnant. And I don't even know where I thought that or why I thought that. But maybe because I hadn't seen pregnant women running. Or I don't know. But the gym that I go to, I had a really in-depth chat with him and he's been okay. brilliant and really reassuring. And he was like, of course you can. You can run right up until the labor. But he would always say, do you know, you should be able to speak when you're exercising.
Okay.
So you don't exert yourself too mm-hmm. much. You don't want to get your heart rate to go too crazy high. So I'm jogging more so than like doing sprints or
yeah,
anything
yeah,
like
course.
That.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, taking it within reason. I know people have, I suppose, different views around running, and it's probably depending on like what was your experience level of running before versus like when you are pregnant. You know, some people, if they're a bit clumsy, like they're definitely going to avoid running when they're pregnant.
And that it is true, because your balance and like your center gravity is off. So you okay. do have to, like, everything I do when I exercise, I do it much more slowly, because if he's like over this way, I'll be like to that side. So yeah, your balance is a bit thrown off.
Yeah No, it's been really interesting. We've had conversations with a couple athletes recently that have been pregnant and are new mums, and like they've you know, kept up their training at times when it, you know, when it suited them and when their body felt ready for it, and they said they've come out the other side of, you know, after having the baby, felt really strong and, you know, gotten kind of back into their routine, and it's been a really good experience, because I think that's really nice when, you know, women are able to come through and still feel like they have that kind of strength. And obviously you've so much more to do than you had before, you know, before having a baby, and it's so busy. So it's just trying, I suppose, encourage women not to be too afraid of getting involved in exercise or some form of movement. But look, that was so interesting. Thanks so much for sharing all the insight. It's great to obviously have someone with the qualifications and the credibility that you bring to the conversation. So thanks a million for coming in, Jess.
And thanks so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Period Panel. Thanks for listening. Be sure to connect with Her Sport across all of the social media platforms, particularly on Instagram, because we'll be putting up a question box before we shoot every episode. Our episodes will be a combination of athletes and health experts, and we'll direct your question to the person that's best able to answer. We hope to see you again at the next episode of The Period Panel.